welcome back to Your Favorite Album, the podcast where we sit down with someone and ask them, hey, what's your favorite album? I'm your host, Adam Santiago, and joining me this week is my buddy, Neil Rubenstein. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello.
I brought my wife.
Hey, that's great. You know, this is the first time I've had a married couple on the show.
I can't do long drives alone, and apparently neither can she.
No, that works great. So let's just jump right into the fun, Neil. What's your favorite album?
Yo, and you know this, like, I struggled with this so much. Should I, like, lead with the album, or can I talk about
this? Yeah, dude. All right. Go for it.
Like, I struggled with this so much, as you know. Like, I even posted, like, on my Instagram and my Twitter, like, hey, guys, which of these 8 albums would you want to hear me talk about for an hour? And, like, I ended up settling on, and I don't mean to say settle, because this is one of the greatest albums ever recorded ever by anyone ever. I settled with Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach's Painted from Memory.
Which caught me off guard.
Well, people who know me, and you know me, like, know that I'm obsessed with Elvis Costello. So, I think this album being my favorite of his albums might catch people off guard. But I don't think anyone that knows me is surprised that it would be an Elvis Costello record of some sort. I think the Burt Bacharach part, it throws people for a loop, but it's just one of the, like, the best crafted, full pieces of music in my opinion. I'm not like some, like, Bach concerto-y kind of guy, but, like, as far as just, like, pure construction, like just as an enjoyable listen, like it doesn't get better.
Yeah, I mean, I was texting you yesterday, I was listening to it, and I was just like, oh, this song right here, this hits it out the park, but it's just got a good flow from beginning to end.
Yes. I mean, the other album, like, I struggled with so much, like, things like, from Motley Crue, Too Fast for Love, which is, for my money, like, one of the best rock records ever written, and possibly one of the most important ones. I could talk about that for an hour easily. And then Antioch Arrow's Gems of Masochism, which is probably, people who like Antioch, it's probably their least favorite of their records. But for me, that's, like, that's just when they finally came into their own. But I don't know that anyone wants to hear, now you're narrowing it down to, like, literally 400 people in America that give any crap about that album. And then there was another album, one of my favorite albums is this band Mousetrap.
And, I don't know them.
Yeah, it's called Dead Air Sound System. They were on Grass Records for that record. I don't know if all the records were on Grass or not. But they're, like, a small indie band from Minneapolis or Chicago, one of those. And that's, like, another one. Like, I'm just, it's too, like, nail on the head. Like, if I pick that record, like, you might like doing the episode because you get to, hear a nerd talk about an album he loves, but, like, and then, like, maybe, your listeners might care, but, like, I'm not bringing anything. I'm like, I'm of no value to you at that point, because it's like, what are you, you're talking about a band called Mousetrap that no one's ever heard of, like, literally 500 people have heard of, and, like, it's just, I had a hard time justifying that.
Sometimes you just gotta go with it, man. You're like, fuck it. This is my chance to do it. I'm gonna do it.
And another one, like, not that I would have done it, but, like, another, like, high up on the list is Guns N' Roses Appetite, and then I saw that Diaz did it. So when I was, like, because you had been asking me to do this for forever, when I finally was like, I really gotta do that, I really gotta pick an album, because I think that was, like, the part at the beginning I was like, dude, there's no way.
I can't narrow it down.
I can never pick an album. When I saw Diaz do that one, I was like, you know what? This is, like, too good of a thing, too cool of a thing. Like, I gotta just.
I actually had a guy text me on Monday night, one of the bartenders from Barcelona, because he was on the show a couple months ago. Texted me Monday, 1 a.m. He's like, man, why did I pick? I should have picked. It's like, what did I do? And I'm just like, wow. Yeah, okay.
It's a struggle,
man.
It's
a tough one. I still go back and forth on that.
Struggle's real, people. What would your be?
I have a few favorites. I love Vanilla Ice's To the Extreme with a passion, non-ironically. It's just, ever since I was a child, it's one of my favorite albums. Weezer's Pinkerton. which is just
also a valid choice,
a gem. And but I went with the Leaves last album just because, like, the personal connection to it and everything.
Right,
and, like,
right,
I was there
right.
for the whole recording process, like being on the road with them, and it's kind of like a deeper connection with that album.
Yeah, that's another, like, the Rival Schools album was on my list too, because it was like same reason, like, because I do have like a deeper personal connection to it. It was so hard, man. It was really hard, and like I want you to run out of friends so that we can, like, you can start over. I can do a second record.
We can
record.
Call second chance.
Yeah.
Yes. So why, like, what do you think, like, why did this beat everything out? Like,
well, all right. One, mass appeal. Like, I feel like for the purposes of this show, I needed to pick something that wasn't so finely tuned, you know, something that wasn't so, that's the wrong word, wasn't so narrow
like
focus.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to pick Mousetrap. I didn't want to pick Anti-Agaro. Even like I could talk about Gens of Masochism for easy hour, easy. I've written articles about it, like, through the years, like, you know, not for, like, public, just, like, blogs.
You know what? I'm going to stay in tonight and write an article.
Just for me. But, I, like, well-written, though.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I'm, like, I'm yeah, kind of all right yeah. at that.
We took time, you know, taking over Jesse's music, short-lived music blog.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
had,
yeah.
You know, and, familiar.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I'd like, I could easily spend an hour on that record, but I just felt like your favorite album should be something that you can play in a room for anyone with anyone. Because I know that with that Anti-Agaro record specifically and especially, like, no one's going to like it. You have to be a very specific kind of person and have very specific tastes to appreciate the things that I appreciate about that album. It's an unlistenable record, you know, and, like, that's what I love about it. And, like, you'll find a guy like Mikey who might not like that kind of music but understands unlistenable rock, like, as a concept. So he'll appreciate it. But I think it's really a very specific group of people you can play for. Like, I can't play that record anywhere and know that the room is like, okay, you're not nuts for liking this record, you know? Which is fine. Like, you could be nut, like, you know, like, I don't care what people think about my favorite albums, but this album, for the purposes of this show, is the one that was like, you can play this for anybody and they're going to appreciate it, if not fall in love with it. Like, you know, you can play for your mom, your grandmother, or, you know, some, like, 17-year-old punk kid, and he'll be like, oh, well, I don't like it, but I get why you like it.
Yeah.
You know, songs are nicely crafted, good lyrics.
That's a good way of putting it. No one's put it that way so far on the show. I like that. So what is it about Elvis Costello? And
I don't,
then we can get into Bert.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I keep trying to face the microphone. I don't know how it happened with Elvis Costello. I was listening to, you know, just like a lot of punk rock stuff, like punk and like some noisy hardcore stuff. Like, I was always a hardcore kid, but I never really liked straight up hardcore. Like, I like Bold and Underdog, but I never was like a, you know, oh, I'm into Bold, I'm into Utah Today and Underdog, and not that they all talk like that. And like,
for the intent of this story.
And, like, Judge and all that stuff. Like, I never got into, like, that stuff heavily. The hardcore for me, like, it was, like, the scene and the community was important. But then musically, the things that I was attracted to were, like, the noisier things, like Half Man, Scapegrace, Torches to Rome, if anyone's catching any of these references, Guyver One, Honeywell, Resurrection even, to some extent, and some of the, like, emo-ier stuff before it was called that. So, like, Endpoint and Four Walls Falling, things of that nature. So that's what I was listening to in, you know, at the end of high school, early post-high school life. And someone, this kid, Brad Farrell, who's a tattoo artist. At the time, I use the term artist loosely, but he was a tattooer. He was a quality guy, and he was in some noisy hardcore bands, and him and like a couple of like guys in his crew, Mike Jasula, Ruben, all these kids. This band, I don't know if you know the band 52X.
No.
One of the better of the noisier hardcore bands from Long Island. Those guys all listen to a lot of Rock from the Crypt. And I was like, oh yeah, what's this band about? And it was like right after, I guess it was like right after Circa Now came out, but right before Hot Charity came out. So I was like, oh, sir, like this is okay. Like this is kind of cool. And then Hot Charity came out. And I was like, all right, this is like really good. So, and I don't know the years or where the Elvis Costello records came out in that period. But in that period of me being shown Circa Now and Hot Charity finally coming out and me like getting on board fully, I had shown some, you know, base interest in a band called Rock of the Crypt. I was already listening to like side projects of theirs or other projects of theirs, so like Drive Like Jehu and Pitchfork.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
I don't know if you include like Tanner or Chune in that scene. So they were like, oh, well, if you like this, Brad in particular was like, if you like this, you should check out Elvis Costello. And I was like, all right. I feel like it's like dad music, but, you know, whatever. And then, like, I listened to, you know, he was like, start from the beginning. And right around then, like, a best of kind of came out. And I don't know if it's the same for you. I feel like when an album comes out, and I might be using this word wrong, but contemporarily to you, that you have more of an affinity to that album. Does that make sense? So, like, if you got into Weezer after Pinkerton was already out, then the Green record.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, record. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Not
yeah.
because it's a better record than Pinkerton, just because that was the one that came out when you were learning to love the band.
Yeah, so, it's like your gateway. Right. Yeah.
So for me, this Best Of came out, and I don't really remember the years. Like, I know Brutal Youth came out around that time. I think Brutal Youth was like 94, and then maybe the Best Of was like 93 or 96. I'm sure we could Google it by the time
you've got technology.
Yeah. You guys at home, go ahead and Google it and let me know that my facts are wrong and I'm an idiot or whatever. So that came out around then, and I was like, it was easy to fall in love with it because it was the Best Of. Like, and it was the Best Of. It was, you know, Miami Is True and This Year's Model and
guessing Allison and Radio.
Allison and Radio, Pump Up the Volume. Not Pump It Up. Or whatever. Whatever the name of that song is. I don't know. I didn't study for this. So like all the hits, you know, and it was easy for me to be like, oh, these are all hits. And then I went back and started from the beginning, and the first record, you know, is a lot of hits and is just a rock record. It's just like, I didn't understand at first, but I understood eventually after listening to the first two albums that, yeah, if you like Rockin' from the Crypt, you should check out Elvis. Like, it made sense to me after that. It didn't make sense to me when all I knew of Elvis Costello was Veronica and, you know, whatever, you know, Allison.
Yeah.
Like it didn't make sense to me then, but then when I listened back to the first full record and the second full record, I was like, oh, you know what? I get why I was pointed in this direction. So then I just got, like, obsessed with the guy and, like, you know, the whole catalog and rarities and whatever, like Japanese concerts and just whatever. Like whatever.
Yeah, you're like me in that boat. You like tracking down all that stuff.
You can't just like something. You have to be like immersed in it. I can't just get into root beer. I have to have people buy me root beer every time I see them. You know, like I can't like just yeah. So. You know, I can't, like, post one photo of a duck at a construction site. I have to, like, post.
Yeah, I've noticed that lately, the duck series.
Like, everything I do is, like, too many of them. I can't just be like, oh, this is funny. It has to be like, this is funny. Everyone has to look. So, yeah, so Elvis Costello, like, you know, I've recently, not recently, like, in the past, you know, 10 years, been able to, like, not be obsessed with him anymore and, like, listen to other music. But at the time, that was it. So 94, I think Brutal Youth came out, and that record's bonkers good. Like, just, and I, again, like, I don't know if other people think it's as good, or that was the one, that was the, you know, the contemporary album for me, that was the one that came out while I liked him, while I was getting into him.
Mm-hmm.
So Brutal Youth was like an amazing record. And then this came out in 98. And, you know, you get more mature, your tastes mature. In the time from 1994 to 1998, that's like, you know, that's eons in, like, in rock music. So for me, my feelings on the whole thing evolved. Like, at first it was like, it has to be noisy, it has to be aggressive. And then as I started to mellow out, which, again, like, I didn't mellow out in 4 years. It took me 40 years. But at the time I was mellowing out, like, some of my tastes were mellowing out, some of my attitudes were mellowing out. And this album came out, and I was able to appreciate it in a different way than I had appreciated music before this. You know, so.
Now that brings up a good question. Like, say this album had come out a few years earlier, do you think you'd still appreciate it for what it was, or do you think you'd kind of, like, brush it off, like, this might be a little too mellow for me right now, like, I'm not digging this?
I would love to say, yeah, of course, I would love to, it would be my favorite album still. I don't know. I think that if it came out before I got into it, it wouldn't be my favorite album overall.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be this podcast. This podcast would be about, you know, Rival Schools or Drive Like Jehu or, you know, something else I mentioned. But I think that I would still learn to love it, you know, because there's things that came out that I wasn't around for and things that I got into way after the fact that I still am enamored by. So
yeah.
I don't think that, you know. My favorite time in music is like 96 to 98. I'm sure there's no, you know, there's no surprise or shock that, like, that's where my pocket is, you know, because that's when I was listening to the most and understanding it the most. So, you know, I'm not surprised by that. But I think if this came out in 78, I would still be able to revisit it and be like, wow, this is a really great record. And I think it is timeless. Like, I don't think listening to now, you know, 20 years later, whatever it is, 16 years later, right?
That's ridiculous.
I don't think now listening to it, like, 18, 16 years later, that, like, when I listen to it or when I play it for people, they're like, oh, this sounds old, or this sounds like whatever, you know. Like, you know, he wrote, you know, Bert wrote, like, all the shit for all these people. And I think if you listen back to those songs, you do feel like, oh, these are old songs. You know, like, what's New Pussycat? And
that song's really dirty.
Yeah.
I once sang it at a karaoke night, and as I was singing, I had to stop and go, wait a second. This is what this song is? This is what he's saying? And everyone's like, just keep singing. I'm like, no, do you see what I'm singing? This is messed up. But it worked.
Yeah, you know, guys, I think things were different back then. You know, you get away with some stuff. I think it was like an arc, you know, of like what you could and couldn't get away with. Like in the 70s and 80s, you could say like whatever the hell you wanted. And then like, then you stop being able to. And like now you can just like talk about like banging bitches and like smoking weed whenever you want. And it's totally fine on the radio.
My lifestyle.
Yeah.
High as a kite. Not
yeah,
at all.
I, wanna...
I do none of those things. I let that one sink in for a second with you.
But yeah, I think like this is a timeless record, and I think if it did come out in the 80s or whenever, I would be able to revisit it and be like, you know what, this is a really, really phenomenal album. Because there are albums from before I got into it, like, you know, I can get behind a couple of Kiss records, you know, and you know, Motley Crue, the Too Fast for Love record came out in 81. I definitely wasn't listening to it in 81. And even when I liked Motley Crue, that wasn't my favorite album. Like, it wasn't until way later. It wasn't until, I'm going to say it wasn't until like the early 2000s that I was like, you know what, this is like a sick rock album. And like listening to other things that came out after it and being like, yo, that sounds like it could be a bite of this first Motley Crue record. So I think that I would still be able to get into it. I just don't know that it would make this particular list.
Yeah, I mean, the appeal of it is great. I mean, it's just tightly crafted songs. Like, it's just, oh, you know, like, you're not going like, oh, this is all right, but it could have been, you know.
I mean, you have, like, you have Elvis Costello, who is, at that point in his career, 25 years in, he's just started branching out in different styles, because, like, Kojak Variety came out around then, and, like, he was doing that GBH thing, like, he did, like, this, like, choir, not choir, like a string orchestra thing for like some PBS show or something. And he started like really like do some different things. And he was doing soundtracks at the time, which is like kind of where this happened. And
was this before or after that whole Austin Powers thing?
Well, it's after. I think it's after. I don't know what year Austin Powers came out, but he did a Burt Bacharach song for the Austin Powers.
Yeah, soundtrack. I'll Never Fall in Love Again. Yeah.
I think that was before. Okay. You know, and he had done a couple of Burt Bacharach covers up until that point that were released. I'm sure he did millions, like, you know, in his home. But they collaborated on God Give Me Strength in 96, which ended up being the final track of the album. I don't know if, you know, if, like, conceptually there was something there or not. But you have this, like, you have this guy who, like, 25 years of rock music, started branching out. He writes sick pop songs. I mean, those, like he plays rock and roll, but those are pop songs that he wrote. Like, Allison is a pop song.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even, like, you know, things like Mystery Dance and stuff that didn't make it, like, huge songs, they're still, like, and Veronica's out at this point. Like, so he's branched out. He's written some different kinds of things. But he constructs great pop songs. And you have Burt Bacharach, who's been writing number one hits for, like, I don't know, I'm guessing 50 years or 40 years. You know what I mean? Like, late 50s, he started, like, charting number one hits with, like, whoever the guy was back then. And then, like, Dionne Warwick throughout the 60s and Dusty Springfield and Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass.
Love
and
those guys.
And he wrote, you know, he wrote Alfie. He wrote the theme to Arthur for Christopher Cross. He wrote What's New Pussycat. He wrote if you give me a second, I'm sure like 8 million songs.
He wrote a lot, damn.
But he wrote so many songs, and he wrote like so many huge hits. Oh, he wrote Heartlight, the Neil Diamond song from E.T.
Really?
Yeah. Like, jeez. he's just all he does is churn out hit songs. Like, you know, like, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, but then he writes hit records. So you have like two, like one prolific songwriter, and then one of the greatest pop songwriters of all time, and you can't lose. Like, you just, they're gonna, you know, I'm sure they wrote 30 songs, and then these were the 12 or 11 or 10 they picked, and they're all monsters. They're all like awesome songs that stand alone, and then whoever sequenced it, it did a great job and made this like amazing album.
Hmm. Now, do you still listen to it a lot, or is it just kind of like every once in a while?
I had been listening to it every once in a while, but then when I was like, I'm gonna do this for the show, I just like started to like play it a little bit more often. So like, drove it down.
Did I miss an eye roll? Like, oh, I'm tired of this album already.
I just, you know, I'm sure I've overplayed it in the past like 2 weeks, but I had overplayed it in my life, so. It wasn't like one of those things where I had to like freshen up on it. Wanted to like remember that it, like, is this one of my favorite albums? And like, I played the record and I was like, oh yeah, it is. And then like, it just stuck in rotation, like.
Yeah, and it doesn't have anything that's really like dated. Like, it's not like you're listening to like Blink-182's like first album and you're like, okay, I was all about this when I was 16. I can still enjoy these songs, but I can't really relate to a lot of these things. But this, it just seems like you can always just get into it.
And like, each song is like about an emotion, about a situation, like a relationship situation. So like, you've either been there, or like you're there now, or if it doesn't resonate with you at all. Like, maybe another time in your life it will resonate. Like, you know, there's certain topics that he discussed that 10 years ago I would have, you know, I was like, I don't, you know, I could do without this song because I don't feel that emotion. Not that I would say that about that song. The song's probably awesome. But then, like, 10 years later, like, that happened. So now different songs reach out to me differently than they had originally. And, you know, and in another 10 years, they'll reach out to me in another new way. You know, like, you know, when you're, you know, when you're 20 or whatever and you're, like, in the worst breakup of your life, you know, that's, like, you know, one song reaches out to you. And then, like, 20 years later when that breakup was, like, so insignificant and you're, like, you know, this is was really important to me as an adult, and you know, in a long term relationship with someone. Then, like, different songs like reach out to you from this record. In my opinion.
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, it's weird how you can grow into a song that you've always loved, but you gain a new understanding as time goes on.
Yeah, it just touches a different part. Like, you know, I don't know. I was gonna come up with a metaphor, but I don't really have one. Like, it just touches a different part of you, like, you know,
but in a good way.
Yeah, or a bit.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Whatever.
Sometimes you're like, oh, now I can relate to this too much, and it just bums me the fuck out.
Like, there's like, what do you say it? You know, sometimes songs are like too cerebral, and then sometimes songs are too emotional, and like, you know, I've heard someone complain about Sunny D lyrics as being juvenile. And, like, I would never say that. Like, no, I'm not a juvenile. And then, like, you listen back and you're like, all right, maybe that one little bit. But then, like, maybe that one little bit of, you know, the sweetest punch where, you know.
That was the song I think I texted you about. I was like, man, that's good.
Yeah, but he, like, I mean, he hits some, like, there's some imagery in there where, like, he hits it a little too over the head. And you're like, all right. I mean, you guys could have worked on that line, like, maybe a little more, but.
Whatever. And Burt Bacharach is like, let's see your resume.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't come talking to me.
Exactly. So, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you can, someone can critique, no matter how pretty you are, someone thinks you're ugly.
I have that problem a lot. That's the, people always shooting me down.
Oh, I mean,
no. So now.
This guy.
I try. You know, you've done a lot of things in music and whatnot. You ever do any covers of this? Any Elvis Costello covers? These Enzymes Do Painted From Memory?
No, I
just wanted to mention These Enzymes.
Well, I was in a band. I was in a band, This Year's Model, but we didn't do any. We didn't ever try to cover any Elvis Costello. I think at the time I kind of told the band, I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not touching it. Like, it's good shit. I don't want to taint it with my shitty voice. I did have songs that I wrote about him, you know what I mean? Like, just about my obsession with him, that, like, you probably wouldn't know they were about him if you heard the song, but, like, for me, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that was about Elvis.
You have to send me these songs.
I do not have to.
I have to listen to all of these.
In fact, the opposite is true.
I would enjoy it so much. Come on, think of all the stuff I've exposed you to.
No, you're right.
You know, Hate Beak.
I was just gonna say, like,
singing death metal. Come on.
I was just gonna say, like, yeah, you got me into like a like an album of just dogs barking.
I try, man. I love that stuff.
Like, you were listening to like baby metal and like Hormone, what, Maximus Hormone, like so long before. Like, they became, like, YouTube things.
Because it's like, when something weird comes my way, I'm like, wait, what? Yes, I'm going to listen to this, like, crazy now, because it's just so fun.
Oh, Maximum the Hormone, that's the name. I'm, like, 90% sure you played me Maximum the Hormone in, like, 2002. Someone out there is going to be like, oh, Maximum the Hormone's first album came out in 2006, so that's totally unfortunate. But... something like that definitely happened. You played something. You played me baby
there's
metal.
Been a few,
like,
there's been a few things. Well, the thing is, when you were like, "Hey, have you ever heard of baby metal?" I was like, "Wait, do you mean the group, or is there like a genre with babies crying?" Because I haven't heard that, but I'm willing to check it out. And then that led to me being like, "Yeah, there's all that weird stuff. There's Hate Beak. There's this guy. There's that. You know, all that stuff. It's music, man. You gotta love it." So what do you take from this album? Like, what is like? That's a tough question. Yeah, I've only asked like in the past like two recordings. I don't know why it's become a new thing for me.
What do I take from it? Like, I just...
Like, what would you say the legacy of this is, besides it being just a bunch of great
personally,
songs?
I mean, personally, not to be like a D-bag, but personally, I don't want to take anything from it. Like, I want to leave it there for other people. You know what I mean? Like, like it's just... It's like, for me, it's not only a great... a wonderfully composed album, fully envisioned, like, I'm not using my big boy words right now, but like this totally perfect, fully formed, you know,
he's got his hands far apart. He's envisioning it right now.
I'm looking for the word.
He's gonna text me at 2 a.m. Yeah. That word.
Can you edit that in?
It's just me dubbing you.
Just thing. It's this like fully formed, perfectly crafted thing. But then like emotionally, it's like it's there's too much going on. You know, like the first few songs give you one thing, and then like the second little set of songs kind of gives you something else, and then you know by the end it's just you know. And, you know, there's sleepers on the record. Like, the first few times through the record, maybe I didn't like Toledo as much or Tears at the Party. But then, like, as it goes, like, I'm going to say God Give Me Strength is probably my least favorite song on the album currently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it's, you know, it's a 6-minute song. I, you know, it's that last song on the record. And then you're just like, I don't know, maybe I'm burnt out on the emotional roller coaster that album is at that point. And I'm like, all right, you know, I don't need to listen to 6 minutes of God.
Well, and that answers my other question, which is basically, do you feel like you need to, like, are you down with sharing it with people, or do you keep it like, no, this is my favorite, like, well, this is my thing?
Well, that brings it back to the beginning. Like, the reason that I chose this album for this is because it is shareable. Mm-hmm. It is like this... It is a totally shareable mass appeal album. Whereas the Antioch Arrow Gens of Masochism record, like, I've written things about it where I'm like, I don't want you to like it. I don't want you to tell me. I don't want you to hear it with me in the room. I don't want to listen to it near you. I don't want you to like it. I don't want you to talk to me about it. I want to keep it in my room and, like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want from that album. I just want to fuck that album. Privately in the dark with like some weird fetishes. I don't want anyone.
That's a Kathleen's look. It's great. Oh, that's amazing.
That's how I feel about that record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know you're not going to like it. I don't want you to pretend. I don't want to try and get you to like it. Like, look, there's people out there that like it. It sold a few copies.
Yeah.
You know, it exists still. I'm sure Aaron Montaigne or whatever his last name is, like, has friends and they like it. You know, I'm sure, you know, but for me, I don't know. Even the people that I know that like Antioch Arrow, that's not their favorite Antioch Arrow record.
Mm.
And if they say that it is, that's cool. I still don't want to talk to them about it. I love Jesse to death, but we'll talk about, you know, we'll talk about In Love with Jets. We don't have to talk about Jets and Masochism. That's for me. That's for me alone in the room. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to talk to him about my favorite porn star. Like,
we'll talk about that one later. I can see that. I loved that description there. I might just keep that sound bit as something separate and just use it every once in a while for things. Or if I ever get around to recording like an EP of songs that I just played, that's gonna be the lead. That's, I'm like, Neil, how would you describe this new EP that these people are about to hear? And it's just gonna be that one thing. I want to fuck it. That's what I want to do, and it's gonna be great. So I was talking to you about before we started recording that, like, I've been thinking about long term with this show, and just like having full songs can be a little tricky with copyright stuff. So you mentioned the Spotify thing. I might have to give in with Spotify and join it and just like have like playlists with the albums or something.
Yo, I fought it so long, man. I remember someone in like 2010 or 11 on tour being like, yo, why don't you have Spotify? I was like, well, if they have, this is a real conversation. If they have 7 of my top 10 favorite albums, I'll get Spotify right now. And I wasn't even like being difficult. Like they had Gems of Masochism. I wasn't being difficult. I gave like a fair. I wasn't like, Mousetrap, Dead Air Sound System, and Hatebeak. And you know, I wasn't even being like that. If they have the Honeywell discography. And Amber Inn and Torches to Rome. Like, I was Elvis, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, and, like, they didn't have 7 of 10. And I was like, fuck that shit.
And now you're totally converted.
Yeah, recently, like, maybe, like, a year and a half ago, or maybe a year ago, another close, very close friend, Rich Gashion, was like, dude, how do you not have Spotify? I was like, well, because, you know, I'm my album collection and blah, blah. And then, like, he made some, like, valid points about, like, getting new computer and, you know, getting a new iPod and getting a new this. And then he, like, constantly got to, like, update your thing. Like, we have, in our apartment, not exaggerating, we have 5 computers and 6 hard drives. I don't need all of them to be full of music.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do if I want to listen to that Antioch Hour record wherever I go. So Spotify,
yeah, helps. I mean,
quite a bit.
I'm going to cry the day my iPod breaks because yeah. I've had the same iPod I've had since we first met.
Wow!
Because I remember you were like, "Do you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I got that on my iPod.
So
I
can send it." This is a spinning wheel.
Yeah, man.
Here's what's gonna happen though.
I think you needed the Parappa the Rapper soundtrack. And I was like, yeah, yes, I got that. Here you go.
And you did have that. Which I still reference constantly. I think I did the other day. Punch. Kick.
It's all in the mind.
Here's what's going to... This happened the other day. I accidentally deleted numbers and the letter A.
On
one of my computers. And that's how I would have felt a year and a half ago. But today, or whenever it was, 3 days ago, I was like, okay. I was like, I have them on 3 different computers, plus my work computer, all of these hard drives. Like, I could juggle hard drives. I was like, you know what? They're not on my phone anyway.
Yeah.
If I really want to listen to, like, a Cidic or a 1349, I'm sure I can either find it on Spotify or, you know... maybe, you know, download it again or get it from one of my other computers. I'm going to check if it has 1349.
So, like, in pertaining to that, I'm not going to be putting full songs on the episodes. I'm going to go back to the previous episodes and, like, chop off those songs. Luckily, they're at the end of the episode.
Yeah, they have 1349. It's on there. Yeah, see, so you're set. I'm fine.
So what song would you recommend to people? If you had to pick one song from this album, what would you...
Like, sorry.
Look at this guy.
I know.
I was going to say, man, you're such a great guest, and then you do this.
I accidentally turned my phone on to
leave
check Spotify.
Now. Leave
now. I'm just trying to prove that 1349 existed on the...
It's over. We're done.
If I had to... the one song, I think you just start at the beginning, In the Darkest Place.
Okay.
That, like, if you were just, like, a new... had no idea what you were in for, like, I think that's a good thing. It's very mellow, it sets the tone, and then, like, so you'll be pleasantly surprised at the more upbeat songs like Toledo and Sweetest Punch, and there's another one in there that's like real poppy, Such a Likey Lovers, you know, that's like another, and I still have the other girls, a little bit more upbeat, but so you'll be pleasantly surprised by those, but I think that first one sets the tone. Lyrically, it's awesome. Musically, it's awesome. And, it's not, you know, it's that mid, it's middle of the road. It's not slow and lingering, but it's not like a slightly popular one. Like that's the Sweetest Punch, the song that you text me about. Like, when you listen to that song, you can tell that it was written by the same guy who wrote Casino Royale for Herb Alpert. Like, it's got that makes you want to dance weird, like Will Forte in a Saturday Night Live skit. Like, it has that vibe to it. you know, that's like a, that's an awesome song, and like it's, you know, I think it's a good like crossover thing. But I think the In the Darkest Place is like
cool. Yeah, and I'll figure out, like, maybe I'll, like, post, like, a link to the video of it until I figure out if I'm going to commit to this Spotify beast.
Look, you have, so you have 27 albums so far, right? Or 28?
Yeah, like, 27, 28, yeah.
I would like to see, do the research, and if 25 of them are on Spotify, just get it just to do that playlist, like, hey, guys, here's where you can find all the records, and then here's, like, a mix of everyone's picks from the album, you know.
Yeah, that's and it's smart. I just need to not be stubborn about this.
You know, and think about it. Like, think about this too. Like, I don't remember offhand, but Diaz probably mentioned like 20 songs
in that
podcast. Mikey probably mentioned 20 bands or songs. You can do playlists of each of what we talk about. So, like, you could put a Gems of Masochism song, a Mousetrap song, if they have. I don't think they have it, but I'm a bad example because I purposely named obscure shit for like 15 minutes, so like, it's a bad example. But like, I'm sure Ed Point's on there. I'm sure Resurrection's on. I'm not sure. I would guess Resurrection's on there. You put that 1349.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, that's a good idea.
I put some Hate Beak, Baby Metal. You know, you could. So like, you know, when you're talking to like Aileen Burns or whatever, and she's talking about like some shit that people might not have heard of but exists. You know, you're gonna be like, oh hey, like this is like her playlist, like the shit that we talked about during the show, so you know you're not lost listening to the show. Because like, if someone doesn't know the things that I'm talking about or the things that Diaz talked about or whoever, like, you're gonna be lost.
Yeah
You know, like, you can't expect everyone to have the same frame of reference that like especially you have, you know, like, you're a fucking weirdo and you have a weird no, like, I mean, we all are.
No,
like,
it's true, yeah.
Everyone who's been on your show, probably.
Yeah, I just have a ton of random information stored in here.
And, like, you're not going to have that frame of reference, you know? Like,
No, it's tough. That's a great idea. I'm definitely going to have to look into that now. Because I just, it's just long term. Because I don't want to get, like, 80 episodes in and be like, oh, crap, I got to get rid of
it. Now I got to go back and do all this shit.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
So, I listened to the Brian Diaz episode most closely because, like, he's a close friend. So, like, that was the one where I was like, dude doesn't have Spotify. Like, it's crazy to me.
It's mentioned on, like, every episode. You even texted me. You're like, yo, you need to get on Spotify. I'm like, I know.
Well, yeah, because you asked about the album, and then you were like, oh, this playlist on YouTube is incomplete. I'm like, what are you, 12? You're like, listening to albums on YouTube?
Hey, it's convenient when you don't have Spotify.
Right, well, that's the only way.
Okay, I'm going to get on it. So, any final words on this album, man?
Don't be shy. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't everyone's cup of tea. This isn't like, don't be too tough to listen to it. Don't be too modern to listen to it. Don't be too classical. Like, just check it out. Like, it's gonna appeal to you. Like, you're gonna find value in it regardless of who you are and what your frame of reference is. Like, that's why I chose this one. That's why I didn't do Too Fast for Love.
Yeah.
You know, because that is dated. That is a time and place record. And, like, you have to listen to, like, hard rock to really appreciate that. You don't have to have listened to any kind of anything to appreciate this record. You don't need to know who Burt Bacharach is. It doesn't matter. Because the dude writes hits. You know, they might not be hits for you because they were written in 1958, but, you know, like, What's New Pussycat is still a massive song. People know that song everywhere you go. The theme from Arthur, like, that's a huge song. like, that song transcends everything in the world. Like, everyone knows that song. I would sing it, but I don't know how to sing.
I've seen you sing.
But, like, you know, I don't know. I think that this thing, this record, is one of those albums that you can't be shy about. Mm. You can't be like, oh, well, I don't really listen to Braid, so I'm not going to check out this band that everyone's talking about sounds like Braid. Like, I don't really like 90s emo, so I'm not going to check out this Endpoint record or this Sony D Real Estate record, or I don't really like hard rock, so I'm not going to listen to Guns N' Roses. Like, this you don't have to like anything. You don't have to, like, you could be my mom and only ever listen to, like, the theme songs to soap operas and still be able to get into this. Like, this is a good, well-crafted album, genre-less, boundary-less.
Word. Well put. Well put. Yeah, man. This has been fun.
Thank you very much for doing this. Yeah. This is cool, man. No,
thank you for doing this. I've been trying to get you on this. I think I talked to you when I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing
before
this podcast.
You did it, yo, I have an email from you. And like the craziest thing is like I kept it as new because like I wanted to be reminded of it every time I checked my email about like my inbox to like remind myself like, yo, you got to do this. Before you did your show. It's like to like 10 of us.
Yeah, I was bouncing back and forth. I was like, these guys would totally be into it if I did.
And I was like, yeah, I'm totally in. And then like, I could never pick an album. And I think I've had like 20 conversations with you during the course of you doing this podcast where I'm like, should I do this album? Should I do this album? Should I do this album? And separately with Diaz, my friend Phil Capone, who you should have on your show.
Send him my way.
Separately with Jesse, like, and then like, I posted that thing on Instagram. I got people hit me up, like Brendan Casey hits me up, like, hey man, what'd you decide on? And I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, I finally decided on this, and I hope people that know me check this out because they give what I say weight.
Yeah.
And people that don't know me check it out because they give your show weight.
Word. No, that's awesome, man. I'm glad we finally got to make this happen.
I'm like still amped up.
Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna do another one right now.
I can see it. You got anything else you want to share with anyone? Any plugs or anything? Tell Dubin to freaking get on the show already. I've been lazy and hitting him up. I gotta hit him up.
I'm getting dinner with him right now.
There you go. Right now. Let's do it.
I'll be like, yo, I just did Adam's show. You gotta do it.
There we go.
He'll get him, kids. 4 minute mile. Oh no, something right home. That's what it is. Or something bizarre, something like out of left field. Like it'll be something like really, like a. I don't know, like Rogi Erickson. Is it just something like
I like it.
Like what? Really, Dubin? But no, I'm picking it now. Something right home about. Or at the drive-in, Relationship with Command.
All right, cool.
Or what is it? I'm trying to think. Is Spoon or Ben Quella record or Dashboard record? Oh, Dashboard. I'm really pigeonholing him. I'm sorry, Michael. I'm sorry.
My bad, Dubin. I'm going to get it to you. Cool. Well, Neil, thanks for being on the show. Kathleen, thanks for hanging out and providing great reactions to Neil's excitement. I enjoyed it greatly. I want to thank everyone for tuning into your favorite album again. Reminder, we're all over the internet. iTunes, Twitter, Stitcher, Tumblr, Facebook. YourFavoriteAlbum.com.
But not Spotify.
I'm gonna work on this. You heard the idea Neil had. Hit me with some feedback. I think it makes sense, especially doing playlists about all the other bands that are mentioned during an episode. I didn't even think of that. That's smart. So, yeah. Thank you. So, yeah. I'm gonna figure out a way to get this track out so everyone can check it out. And maybe when I do the Spotify thing, it'll be easier. But definitely check out Painted From Memory by... just had a swim. I'm not even going to edit that.
I think I killed
Adam. I'm not even going to edit that out. Painted From Memory by Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach. It's really good. So yeah, have a good one, everybody. Goodbye.